हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
We're on 28, Story of Vishwamitra. So just one thing on before, on the, I was thinking on the instructions of Urvasi. Then that principle, because you have that aspect of, there's inherent material qualities in the feminine nature, but at the same time, if there's devotional service, then those don't have an effect, right? Like we were saying before. So then, if we take what... Then putting that together is that you have what Chanakya Pandit says about the women that eat twice as much, four times as clever, six times as envious, nine times as lusty. So then you have that, what is the principle there? The principle is more interest in engaging the senses and the experience of that, right? In whatever ways there are, social, intellectual, sensual, all these different aspects. Right. So now, if one is seeing on the material platform, this will be in place. With training, then one can control that, because even though there may be more interest, then the difficulty is one doesn't follow within the religious principles. Then ultimately, it doesn't really work out nicely, because the things of security and all those aren't actually there. You may increase the sense gratification, but you don't actually increase the security element, which is actually more major. Does that make sense? The dependent nature is actually a bigger factor than the area of the senses, right? Because the senses enjoyed themselves, that's one thing, but the senses used, engaged for someone else, that's a higher principle. So therefore, if you go from sense gratification up to swargya rasa, right, from partiva up to swargya, then it's about others, then things can be controlled. Does that make sense? So that's what it's meaning. Even if the husband is a great guy and everything like that, takes care very nicely, but if it's based on the senses, then the point is senses, how you say it? They give their effect, whether someone's nice or not. So if the interest is in sense gratification, if that facility is there, then it will be taken over proper relationships. So it makes sense? Now if there's training, and one actually understands how things work and the bigger picture, then one will take relationships over the sense gratification. Right? But it means properly performed relationships already include the engagement of the senses. Because that's the whole thing. For the ladies, then, nice things to see, nice things to smell, nice things to taste, nice things to wear, nice things to hear. Does that make sense? So that kind of environment then supports that swargiya rasa. But in any case, this position still remains of that weakness and that. But if we go to the platform of spiritual view, right, then it's a matter of, yes, one may see things through the medium of the sensual level, but if it's not about sense gratification, right, then, and it's about Krishna, then this is not a problem at all. This is not a weakness anymore, right? Because it means we're serving Krishna by using the senses, right? What's it? Krishikesha, Krishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchate, right? So we're engaging the senses in the service of the Lord of the senses, Right? Does this make sense? So, then, if we're seeing opportunities to engage the senses connected to Krishna, then the problem is gone. So then we've switched from Partiva Rasa or Swargiya Rasa over to Vaikuntha Rasa. Because the point is it's going to go between the rasas. So we may use the intellect to get there, but it's about switching from one to the other. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of where one will be situated, because the feminine nature has to be situated in rasa. Right? So then it's just a matter of how, and then using the intellect, then we can understand how Krishna is all-pervading, he is everything, everything's connected with him, therefore, then whatever we're doing, it's not a matter of seeing it in relation to sense gratification, but seeing it in relationship to serving Krishna. Does it make sense? So then, the intelligence is used, right? But it's a practical intelligence, so it's a cleverness, right? Because we said four times it's clever. So if it's used in that way, then one will be able to cleverly see how all the senses can be connected to Krishna and serving Krishna. All the opportunities are there. So then it switches. That's why Prabhupada says if the you know, women are devotees, then this doesn't apply. Because it means it switches. But it's a matter of the consciousness. Where are you going to situate yourself in rasa? But if you're a materialist, then it's either untrained, it'll be Partiva. With training, you can get it to Swargiya. That's just the way it is. But with devotional service, then you can bring it to Vaikuntha. Right? Does that make sense? So it differs from the men, where there's so much focus on that aspect of how he's all-pervading, he is everything, you know, the structure of the universe, the breakdown of the universe in Shankya. That's because then it takes them off the material, I'm the controller and enjoyer, into just I'm the soul, onto the spiritual platform. Right? So it's an intellectual adjustment. You understand? So the intellect is the medium. Well, for the women, the mind is the medium. Right? So, therefore, if you take it off the material, yes, you've controlled the senses, but you haven't necessarily brought it, it's spiritual, but you haven't brought it to the transcendental, which is devotional service. Because the men can function on that platform. It's simply mechanical. Right? So, therefore, it can, yes. Does that make sense?
Yes. Spiritual women untrained will be Partiva Rasa and sometimes Vaikuntha Rasa?
It means it'll just move between them, whatever is happening. You have a nice arrangement, the temple program's going on, nice kirtan, nice abhishek, something's going on. Then it will be Vaikuntha, because the taste is there, very enthusiastic. And that men will say, yeah, it was a nice program. The women are all, wow, it was, you know, like that, because they get absorbed more in the rasa of it. You know, and then, you know, with friends and family, then, you know, they're sharing that, and then, you know, interacting, it may go to that. But if point for sense gratification comes up, depending upon the training, they may take advantage of it or not. You know what I'm saying? So that's where it's going to be very much just training. That's why the Vedic, it's so much about training and about protecting. So protection means you create an environment for Vaikuntha Rasa, the woman will function in Vaikuntha Rasa. It's complete. But the basis of it, when you fall out of Vaikuntha Rasa, you fall down into Swargiya. But if there's no protection, then whatever the position, one will fall back out into Partiva. Right? So that's the difficulty. You know, it's like you see the apsaras when Krishna comes and there's a program. They're coming, they're in ecstasy, they're singing, they're dancing and all this. But other than that, they may be singing in Indra's court or anything. You know, so it's the point is women are always going to be situated in rasa. So even if there's a lack of rasa, then they'll lament about it and get some taste out of that. Does that make sense? So that's the principle. Well, the men, then we see as, oh, but this just says here, what about the men? Like the question came up the other day. But the men, it's just like, there's three verses on women, and then, oh, what about the men? It's just like all the rest of the cantos were about men. Right? Because if they catch it, they'll create the environment, and then with that environment, the problem of the three verses is solved. But without the other nine cantos, they're not going to arrange that to solve the three verses. Yes?
So I have a question about the map.
Yes.
Previously we discussed that the men in Kali Yuga very weak, most likely like women. So can they follow the same process of purification?
Yes, yes. Means it's the same because the how you could basically say is mechanically how the man thinks and works is like a man. He may do it in the environment or in the context of women, but is not a woman. Otherwise it would be easier to understand. Right, the women would understand the men that they are women, and then deal with them like women, and then problem solved. Right, alpha female controls beta, you know, female who happens to be male. You know, then it works. But it's not understood because they still think like men, though they're acting like women. That's what becomes weird.
Yeah,
like that. But the others don't have to. When you have women who act like men, they still think like women. So if you know the science of women, you can still see the femininity and know how to deal. Like that. But the other one, it just doesn't make sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maharaj, can you say that Parthiva is mundane, Swargiya is dharma, and Vaikuntha Rasa is paradharma?
You could say like that. It just means, no, it's not so much mundane, because Parthiva and Swargiya are mundane. It's just one is sensual and one is dharmic.
Yeah, that's dharmic.
Yes, but you said material and then dharmic.
Yes.
But dharmic is also material.
It is also material.
Yes, so that's why it says sensual, emotional, and spirit, you know, transcendental. Yeah, does that make sense? Because here we're using, because we're trying to differentiate between being off the material platform but not on, in relationship with Krishna. That's why we're using the term spiritual and transcendental. But if you're just using a generic sense, the two words are interchangeable. Right? But if you're making that distinction, someone has come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, so now he's on the spiritual platform, we are making a distinction. He has attained perfection. We're making a distinction. He's developed attraction for Krishna, love for Krishna. We're making no distinction. There's a difference. Right? Perfection means you perfected, means you've come to the platform of understanding of the soul, not the body. That's perfection. But real perfection is developing a relationship with the Lord. So going on to prema. Just coming to the liberated is not enough. Is that okay? So the men will still function in the same way. There's not a problem. It just may be that the contexts and stuff are harder to work with, but the man can still, he'll still think in the same way. He still thinks, you know, how you say, he'll either think, you know, spiritually, intellectually, emotionally, sensually, all, you know, one at a time. That's still going to work. While the ladies look, it's all at once. So if the Vaikuntha is prominent, then everything else serves that. Does that make sense? But if it goes the other way, then everything serves that. So that's the difference. Is one is all together, the other one is there. So the aspect of Atmarama, that not that the female couldn't come to that, not be on that, situated on the transcendental platform of Atmarama. It's just that they don't think Atmarama. Right. Does that make sense? But the man can think, he's just satisfied on his own. Guy comes home at night, sits out after a long day at work, sits down on the couch like that, and just vegetates. He's happy. He's good. Like that. Women don't do that. They might sit down for a moment and enjoy not having to do something. But they're not vegetating. They're actively engaged in, wow, you know, stretch your legs out, put your arms all the way out, this and that, make it comfortable, and then after 5 minutes, then you want something to eat, and they get up and go to the kitchen. Right? So, like that. So it won't, but to be able to sit there and just vegetate, that men can do. That's because of that Atmarama aspect. So, Sankarshan without Prajumna Ariudra and Vasudev, men can do that. Women only function actually within the Prajumna Ariudra and Vasudev. But because they're dependent, they depend upon having someone who is situated in Sankarshan. So that means they have to have the masculine element. Right? So then that means the better trained he is, the better is the quality of Prajumnadi Univasade, which is rasa. So in other words, Shankarshan is the tattva, the three are their rasa. So the quality of their rasa is going to depend upon the knowledge and skills of the person in Shankarshan. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then, that's why then, you know, it's always, you see the prayers about the young girls that they'll marry a nice devotee and stuff, because then the situation is higher. Because whatever situation you're in, that's what they're going to be doing. Like Gandhari, she complains to, after the battle, she complains to Dhritarashtra, says, you know, our son, you know, it was told to you that he was going to make trouble and destroy the dynasty, and it was recommended that you put him out in the forest. You know, you put him out in the forest, then according to his karma, it'll be taken care of. The forest people find him, they'll raise him, he'll be a forest man. You know, how much influence, political influence, will he have? Right? He may be the biggest guy in his tribe, but, you know, it's not going to get that far. So, but she said, that's what was recommended. Why didn't you do that? Instead, you gave him to me. Right? Because when you do the birth ceremony, first the child's given to the father. And then he does the mantras and like that. Then he gives to the mother. So it was at that time, they said, put him in the forest. But he was too attached. So her point was, since you gave him to me, I'll deal that way. So then she raised the kid that she knew was going to destroy the dynasty. Right? So that's the whole point. The feminine, that's where the dependency is. Depending upon the environment that she is within, she'll function according to that. So you put her in a higher environment, she can function in that. She's in a lower, she'll function according to that. Because the point is, rasa will be tasted. Is that good? Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, if I understand correctly, this masculine in environment, first, if a person is materially attached, then the mind has already attachment. So the intellect only works, whatever his attachment is there. But it is through intellect that he achieves what he desires.
Yes, that's why at any point, that's why we associate with the acharyas and the scriptures. Then, because then we're in contact with the pure intelligence or the spiritual intelligence. And then using that intelligence, then we can control the mind. But otherwise, if we're untrained, the mind will control the intelligence. So our material intelligence may be controlled by the mind, so there's no way we're going to advance on that platform. But by spiritual intelligence, we can, because the soul has natural intelligence. It has its pure state of intelligence, mind, senses, you know, understand, consciousness. But if we don't identify with it, we don't use it. So that's the idea. By this, we constantly are then identifying. Well, I mean, coming in contact with the idea that will switch the identity. That's what we were saying before. So we can see as all of what the Bhagavan Tab talks about, that's for men and women, but we see most of it is geared for the masculine perspective. Because ultimately, all living entities in the material world think that they're male, because they're the controller and enjoyer. Just some think masculine, some think feminine. But the underlying, the foundation is that they're all male, we're all the controller and enjoyer. Does that make sense? So that's, if that can be established, everything else will be established. Because if you establish the Brahmins and they can think like this, then their lives will go, they can establish Kshatriyas, their lives will go well, they'll create the environment in which therefore everybody else will be able to be God conscious. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, that's the easy thing. You get one of these big life members to actually be a pure devotee, then arranging a program for him is nothing. Right? They weddings they do, they cost a crore, 2 crores, 10 crores. We wouldn't even know what to do with a crore if, you know, someone handed it to us. You know, maybe dance around for a while, but, you know, that's, they don't do that, you know. You know, you don't leave the money sitting out there and dance around. Someone can come in and take it while you're dancing, right? So doing that, the guy's got a factory, he's got 10,000 workers. So to organize something for 10,000 is nothing for him. You know, we do a big Pandal program and 10,000 people come. You know, and all so much work and this and bumping heads with each other and everything and creating so much. That for him, it's just a few, you know, tell this one this, that one that, and then check up and all that, and he's got it all arranged. You understand? That's why I say you start with the Brahmins. You get the Brahmins. They'll get the leader. They'll take care of everything else. You know? Because they don't adjust with everything else. They just work. You know, it's just like one devotee was telling me, how you say, from an aristocratic background. And then we were talking something about the taxi wallahs at the time. And then they kept going in and out of taxis in Calcutta and dealing with taxis in England, you know, and stuff like that. And then at one point it came down to, you know, how they ask for more money. And then they harass you, argue you this and that. And I know I'd get right in there and really fight for it and this and, you know, real make a scene, right? You know, and, you know, finally work it out. But then he was saying his mother, you know, if the taxi, you know, it's like, let's say the taxi's supposed to be 100 rupees. And then he asked for more. She would just look at it and say, don't be silly, and just hand in the money and walk off. And they can't do anything. Because it's just the attitude. While us, it's like, wow, that's cheating, that's that, why are you asking for more and all that? And all it is. And so that just is, that's not reality. You understand? So that's the whole point, is this, all this trying to adjust and, what is it, you know, cajole and all these different things, all the karmis, and oh, they won't like this and they won't like that, and we have to adjust this and adjust. That's because we're on their platform. So for us, it's actually we're the same values, just we purified ourselves. But for those who are above that, who have a higher understanding of the social, you don't need to adjust. You know what's necessary, you just do that. They want to eat, then we feed them. They need this, we do that. And we can't say, what about the individual? The point is in this case, it means, what is the requirement? How they'll deal. Does that make sense? You know, they're Bengalis, so what does that mean? Do we give them chapatis or do we give them rice? Right? Rice. And do you say, oh, but what about the individual? No, they all want rice. That's the whole point. Does that make sense? So that's the advantage of Dharma, is you know actually what is wanted. Like that. And then you make the arrangements. So that's how the mission works. That's how we talk about how to, you know, introduce Varnashram, how to introduce all this is how. Prabhupada's already said, you create a class of Brahmins, then they can create Kshatriyas or, you know, train Kshatriyas. They'll deal with the rest of it. You don't have to worry about it. That's the point. Brahmins don't have to establish it. They simply have to make Kshatriyas. That's their duty. In other words, the Brahmin, his business is to protect Dharma. So that doesn't get adjusted or watered down or changed because somebody felt like it, right? They create Kshatriyas. Their business is protecting the people, which means then, according to Dharma, managing the people, creating the environment in which they can thrive. Does that make sense? So if you do that, then everything's set, because Varnashram is established by the Kshatriyas under the direction of Brahmins, but it's they actually do it. Not the Brahmin says, do this, do that. No, the Brahmin explains the system. The Kshatriya, understanding it, he applies it. Is that? Okay. Yes.
You mentioned...
A little louder.
Yeah, you mentioned that the man, he functions in Sankarsana and the woman in the other three. But...
No, if the man, then he means his inherent state will be that one.
Yeah.
But with training, then he knows how to function in Prajumna, Shankar, Vasudeva, and Aniruddha. So he, a trained man, able to, that's the meaning of the man has to be sensitive. He's trained in that, control the senses and be sensitive. Then he's trained in those three. And the girl, she's trained in those three. So now that's a match.
Yeah. But if the women are in Pradyumna, like if they are training Pradyumna and Abhidhata, but that is possible, only the Sankarsana is strong enough.
That's there. That's why it says the girl is under the protection of her father, her husband, her son. That was why we were making the point. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because that was also in the purport. That was, it's that woman is never independent because she'll just look for rasa, but she's not discriminating what is better rasa or less better. It's rasa. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say somebody is really, really hungry. They don't discriminate between food. It's just it will take care of hunger. Right? So that's the point, is we're dealing with the feminine nature, because that hunger for rasa, that unless the environment is controlled, then it could be any rasa. So that's why then the father, then the husband, then the son, they take care of to see that it's there. Now, if the girl comes to the transcendental platform, then she can function on her own, yes. But that means she's liberated. So yes, Gargi wandered around alone. But she was on the transcendental platform. No, she wasn't trying to be, all the different things that the modern lady's trying to be. She was just a sadhu. Right? And not looking for recognition, because she is a sadhu, because that's also that rasa. She's absorbed in the transcendental, in their service to Krishna. That's ekayana. So it says once you get to that platform, yeah, you don't have to worry about it. But the point is generally the devotees who are on that platform, they come down to the Madhya platform to preach. Right? Because she wanders around alone, but when she preaches, she comes down to, like, Sukadev Goswami. He didn't make any distinction. He did. Because he acted as a Madhyama. But then when he's wandering around on his own, he is as an Uttama, and he doesn't care. Like that. So this idea is, I'll be an Uttama and then do all the activities of a neophyte because I like it better. That's not philosophy. Yes.
Would we say that sections like the second half of fifth canto, second canto, like that, are more easily applicable for men than women because of the sankhya?
No. The women can apply it, but the women are using it as a, how you say? They're just using it as a tool. The goal is the taste.
Right.
While the men will use it as, a tool, the mechanics to get to that position of being freed from material attachment or freed from, does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
So the men will use it more mechanically.
Right.
Women will use it just as, but for them it's just, you of course you use it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
You know what I'm saying? But, women go into the kitchen and cook. Men go into the kitchen, it's all about this one does this, that one does that, and this one will be, I can get a better effect if I use that, like that. So it's just slightly different. So it's all those things are applicable for women.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the use of it is just something to use to get to the actual main thing. So that's why if one's brought into that environment, one will use the intelligence and cleverness for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, then one will just use the environment for sense gratification. If that means using men and throwing them away to get sense gratification, that's what will be done. So it's the same technique.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point, is it's the same thing. It's just that if you're not trying to bring it up, it will go down. Just like I'm the controller and enjoyer, unless there's control by religion, it will go down to the, end up as an indigopa. Is that?
Yeah. Raj, you're talking about how the Brahman is supposed to establish Vana Ashram. And I was just wondering, hearing from Sri Rama, she's talking about the qualification to enter Van Ashram means you become a human being first.
Yes.
And he's explaining from the seventh canto, the instructions of Narada Muni to Yudhishthira Maharaj about,
yes,
the 30 qualities of a human being.
Yes.
And it seems that some of the qualities there of a generic human being, like truthfulness, etc., are the same qualities that give the spirit of a Brahmana.
Because it's Brahminical culture. That's why Varanashram is called Brahminical culture.
Hmm. So that means that if one is a Brahmana within the Brahminical culture, it means that truthfulness will become manifest more?
Because what is truth? How do we define truth?
According to what's in the Shastra?
Yes. But what it means, if we take the local newspaper, what is truth? Facts. That's not even facts, it's perception of facts. You understand? So the principle of truth is there, everyone will agree, but what that means is another thing. It's just like, let's say you have thieves. What is being truthful? Means with the other thieves, you know, you don't try to cheat them. That's being truthful. But the point was is they did cheat someone else to have the money that they're going to divide up without cheating.
You understand? Unkind.
Yes. So the whole point is you have different levels of what you call truth. You know, just like, let's say, have we ever heard the term being true to myself? You know, I was trying to do that, but it wasn't me. I just couldn't relate to it. You ever heard that? You haven't heard.
Yeah,
okay. That's how a Shudra looks at things. You know? You know? Because it's about expressing themselves, being true, and, you know? You know, Vaishya, it makes money, that's true. It doesn't make money, it's an illusion. You know? So it's not that everyone sits around, talks business, does this and that, okay, that's truth. No, the guy who can make the money, that's truth. And the guy who talks about it, that's not truth. Right? You understand? Kshatriyas, it has to be according to what, this is the law. That's truth. Right? And then for the Brahmins, then it has to be, you know, that understanding connection with Brahman. That makes it truth. Right? So, truthfulness is there for everybody. But the actual point is to become Vaishnava. That's the real point of Varnashram. You know what I'm saying? But it can be used by others, because if Varnashram's there, just like back in the 70s, you could go in, you know, so many shops on every block, you could buy dhotis and cloth for making chuddars and kurtas and everything like that. You know, all good quality, varieties and everything. You know, huge amounts of varieties. Why? Because people were pious, they were following the Shastra, even though they were materialists. It means 30% of all men wore dhotis in Calcutta. In the 70s. You know, you look out on the street, you see so many dhotis. Like that. But now it's probably you don't see any. Right? And so it's hard to get, you know, proper cloth and stuff now. You understand? So, that was the thing, is that if everybody follows the Vedic culture, it makes it easier for the devotees. Because it's meant for devotees. But the materialists will benefit by using it. But it's actually meant for devotees. Vedic culture is for devotional service. It's not for, we deal with, oh, that's the karmi thing. Then there's, but then what is the culture of devotees if we're not using the Vedic? Oh, just devotional service. So that means you're just sitting around and, hey, can you, I thought, you know, our family, you know, you've been here in the community for a while. We'd like to get to know you. So could you come over to our house this evening for chanting japa? You know, everybody comes over, sits down around, and then just chants the whole thing. And then after 2 hours and that, and they go, wow, so nice, thank you for coming and all that. And then you leave, right? Right? Isn't that? So what would you do?
Invite people over?
Yeah. Okay, we could have a kirtan, or we could have an artik. And then after the artik, then they go. But prasad, but then how, what does that mean? How is it going to work? How is it, you understand? Because as soon as you add these things, where are these defined within the Vedic culture? Because if we're going to say Western culture, then, you know, are you going to sit down with, you know, three forks, three spoons, three knives, two cups, you know, a plate, and on top of that's another plate? Knock me out. Name me how many devotees that even know what to do with that. But that's Western culture. So what's practiced now is Western and lack of culture. You know. You understand? So that's what the whole point is the whole culture, that's what's defined in the Vedas. But the purpose of it is to know Krishna, to become God conscious. The materialists may use it not for that, but that's not what it's for. All the arts, the sciences, knowledge, it's all meant for serving Krishna. That's what it's for. people will use it not to serve Krishna. So, but that's not the fault of the Vedic culture, and that doesn't make it as something separate. No, there only is the Vedic culture. That is culture.
Why is there so much confusion in ISKCON about how to implement Vana Ashram?
Because who's talking about it? Means what? Who's talking about it? Where are they situated? Where do they live?
Different places that talk about it.
Any of those places happen to be in India?
No. Some devotees like yourself, obviously.
Yeah, or Bhakti Bikash Maharaj, and how well did his book go down? You understand? So in other words, all those who talk about Varnashram, how many have been connected with actually the culture itself and have actually seen it and experienced it? You understand? So like Shivram Marsh, he's seen it. One, he's cultured anyway, even before joining. He would know what to do with all those forks and spoons and stuff. Right? And then he spends time in India. He likes spending time in India. He sees these things. He knows these things. Right? So you see, in his area, there's structure, there's all these different things. Right? But most talk about it, they have no experience of it, no interest in it. They identify, well, we're Westerners, so we can't actually use it like this. You know, so the Indian stuff's for the Indians. We're Westerners, but we're not Westerners like the Karmis. So we're something in between. We're something new. We're something unique. We need to develop this, because we can't use the Shastra, right? Because the Shastra is not eternal and about, you know, everything that's there. And the absolute truth, and all these great sages there from so long ago, what would they, and they're spiritual, what would they know about the what was going on, what we're doing? You know, because what we're doing is so unique and special. So therefore, we have to work it out what to do.
But we in Bharat Varsha.
Sorry?
We in Bharat Varsha. I mean, we in Nabadweep now.
Yes, but we're talking about those who are outside at this point. Yes. Does that make sense? So therefore, what happens? It just becomes brought down to a socio-economic system that's used on the platform of pranamoy, just for economics. It's just artha. It's not about protecting the people. When we talk about management, like you've heard, you know, devotees talk about management courses, is it about how to protect the devotees and create facility for the devotees, or is it how to efficiently get things done? So that means it's on the business level. It's not on the level of Dharma. So it's not Varnashram. So their management isn't management of Kshatriyas. That's management of Vaishyas, and that's on a good day. Because do they actually make profit? Because if they don't make profit, then they got a problem. So they have an interest, so they should find a Vaishya who actually knows how to do something and engage them and go work for them. Then they can engage their propensities for so-called success, you know, techniques, and actually get something accomplished. You understand? This is reality, but the problem is it's so stark, that's why people don't want to deal with it. That's why then you just speculate and sit around and talk about it, nibble at it, and then nobody gets hurt. Does that make sense?
I don't know if it would be appropriate to ask this, but what about Devamrita Swami in his regards to trying to apply Vana Ashram?
But what about it? Why are we... He doesn't spend time in India. He didn't write a book on, you know, Vedic India and Lost and all this and that. So he's one of the ones that doesn't have a problem with Vedic culture. Mm-hmm. That's what I said. Anybody who has that. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay. Okay. Story of Vishwamitra. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Vishwamitra, the son of Maharaj Gadi, was as powerful as the flames of fire. From the position of a Kshatriya, he achieved the position of a powerful Brahmana, by undergoing penances and austerities. Srila Prabhupada comments, now having narrated the history of Lord Parasurama, Sukadeva Goswami begins the history of Vishwamitra. From the history of Parasurama, we can understand that although Parasurama belonged to the Brahminical group, he circumstantially had to work as a Kshatriya. Later, after finishing his work as a Kshatriya, he again became a Brahmana and returned to Mahendra Parvata. Similarly, we can see that although Vishwamitra was born in a Kshatriya family, by austerities and penances, he achieved the position of a Brahmana. These histories confirm the statements in Shastra that a Brahmana may become a Kshatriya may become a Brahman or a Vaishya, and a Vaishya may become a Brahman by achieving the required qualities. One's status does not depend upon birth. As confirmed, yes.
When we get initiated, we become automatically Brahminical, I suppose.
By ashram.
Yes, but we don't have qualities yet, supposed to develop them.
Means by practicing the devotional process, then all good qualities come. So then it's just a matter of what skill, knowledge and skills our particular conditioning can work with. So that's what we do. So at that time, whatever that is, that's what we do. As that develops, then it's there. Does that make sense? But, you know, we go by what's happening today and engage in that. Because by engaging in service, that's how it'll develop. Like those 30 qualities that Narad Muni mentions for to be able to practice Varnashram. If you don't have those qualities, then by practicing devotional service, they'll come. They'll develop. So then it becomes easier and easier to take part in the process. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like anything. We don't know how to do something. We learn the knowledge and skills. We practice it, and with time, we become better at it. So in the same way, as we don't have the skill, knowledge, skills, or qualities to practice Varnashram or understand it, but by devotional service, then applying it into that area, then it will develop. You know, just like anything. You want to become a cook, you practice cooking, you get there. You want to understand you understand that, and then you move forward. But it's only by the power of devotional service that we're able to do that. People who are born into it, into the system, then generally speaking, they can follow it nicely because they have the qualities. But it's not that according to the position they're born in, that's the position they have to remain in. It will be according to what is actually the nature. Right? Because there may be some circumstances why they ended up in that family. Does that make sense? You know, Vritrasura was a great king, ended up as a demon. Right? You know, so these things happen. You know, apsaras end up as crocodiles. You know, so it's not that that's, you know, the natural dharma of apsaras is to, you know, sit inside a lake and catch sadhus. Right? They, you know, the natural position is on the land, they'll catch the sadhus. Right? Like that, you know. So that's it.
Maharaj, here it appears Vishwamitra is the son of Maharaj Gadi. So he's the same personality whom his, like, you know, the mother-in-law of Satyavati's mother got from taking that fruit. The story before says Jamadagni, who was born, he's like, you know, supposed to be in the Brahmanical family with Kshatriya intelligence. And in the Kshatriya family, his mother-in-law with Brahmanical intelligence. Is this the same personality of Vishwamitra?
I don't know. Did it say that he was?
It said that he was son of Maharaj Gadi.
He was son of Gadi. No, but Gadi was whose son?
Gadi's wife was the same person who was the mother-in-law of that Satyavati.
So King Gadi was doing the arrangement.
Rishikamuni.
Oh, okay, and then his son-in-law is that?
Yeah.
Could be. Otherwise, yeah, why get into Vishwamitra?
He becomes the most learned in the scriptures.
Yes, but at the same time, it's because of the Kshatriya background, then it has that kind of flavor to it.
That's the reason.
It means he'll be a Brahmin, but he's still born, you know, from Kshatriya parents. So that environment can doesn't have to, just like we see with, I think it was Rishabhdev. Then he had 80 sons who were Brahmins. So you don't hear of them, you know, going out and laying waste to, you know, bad behaving Kshatriyas. Right? So it's not that it's that's there, but it appears in his case there was some flavor, because it technically he wasn't supposed to be a Brahmin. Right? Like that. Though, just like Parasuram wasn't supposed to be like a Kshatriya. Really, so that means... Oh, no. So that means Parasuram and Vishwamitra then are uncle and nephew.
Mm-hmm. No.
Grandfather. No. Grandfather's Gaudi. His son is Vishwamitra.
Parashuram is Jamadagni's son. Jamadagni is...
Oh, that's because that was the daughter. And then that came down... Yeah, he would be the grand... Mm-hmm. No, that would be make him a uncle. What do you call it?
Yes,
there's no
we
name.
We call it grandfather.
You say grandfather. Okay. You call it grandfather.
In India, they have different names.
It's the grand-uncle.
No, no, it's above that. Yeah, but they'll have specific names. There's like 50 family positions that all have specific names and specific relations and like that. Well, we just have, you know. Yes.
Maharaj, even this Mahindra Parvat, we discussed that, that it is in Kerala, but actually it is in Bihar province.
It's in Bihar?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's in Bihar.
Yeah.
Good for the Biharis.
Required.
Yes.
The next sentence will say that if they show qualities, they should be considered from that class.
Yes.
Vishwamitra, by his qualities, he is supposed to be Kshatriya.
On one sense, but at the same time, his inclination, his interest is in Brahminical activity. It's just that there's that flavor of, you know, the Kshatriya element doesn't forgive so easily and this and that.
So we take that.
But you see, as he does, but it's just it takes him a touch longer than, let's say, Vishishta.
Because for us, we also have an inclination. And what we do has nothing to do with the inclination.
That's there. But he functions according to the inclination. It just has a flavor of this other thing. So that's why you take. What's the prominence? So he prominently does all the Brahminical activities. Has the knowledge, he has the lifestyle, has the activities. So then we'll take him as that way. But then, because it's a prominence, that means what's not prominent, that may have, you know, some Kshatriya flavor to it. Right? That's why it's recommended that things shouldn't be mixed. That's why Richika Muni was saying that this is not good. Right? Because of the mix. Because if it's clear, then it makes it much easier.
Yes. And then he becomes a Brahma Rishi. Then that mix is not there, or is it still there?
By the stories that keep going on, it seems to always be there. Mm. You know, I mean, that's half the fun.
Till Lord Ramachandra comes.
Till Lord Ramachandra comes.
After that, we don't hear much about Vishwamitra.
Oh, okay. So it appears he, the blessings of, because that's the thing with Vishwamitra, is that he was there, he took Ram, he was doing the yajnas and everything like that. And Vishwamitra, he could get rid of the demons himself, but being a Brahmin, he wasn't doing it. So by that time, he seems to have kind of... Yeah. And, but he gave the mantras and the knowledge to Ram by which he could. You know what I'm saying? So he knows all the Kshatriya knowledge, it's just that he doesn't use it.
Actually, it is mentioned... It is that all pastime was said as Balya Leela, but actually it refers to Vishwamitra, because by association of Lord Ram, he got matured.
Oh, okay. Okay, so Balya
is for Vishwamitra.
Is for Vishwamitra. Okay. Okay, interesting. Okay. Yeah. One's status does not depend upon birth, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 7:11-35. By Narada, if one shows the symptoms of being a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. To know who is a Brahman and who is a Kshatriya, one must consider a man's quality and work. If all the unqualified Shudras become so-called Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, social order will be impossible to maintain. Thus, there will be discrepancies. That's why this concept of making everyone equal won't have any benefit for anyone. Because the point is you can say you give equal facility, equal opportunity. But the point is equal opportunity means according to the nature, not it's exactly the same thing. Right? You know, could you imagine in a hospital, equal opportunity means everyone in the hospital gets exactly the same thing to eat. Right? You know, for a few people that might work, but for most people it just make them more sick. So equal opportunity means according to the actual nature that someone is. Equal opportunity means someone with a brahminical nature can do brahminical stuff. Kshatriya nature, kshatriya, vaishya, vaishya, shudra, shudra. This says, no, everybody gets to do brahminical work or everybody has to do shudra. That's not equal. That's biased. Right? But due to motive ignorance, it sounds great, so we think it's not. But it's actually the most biased because we're not considering the particular people. The one is, okay, you're biased against this, that, or to generic. But the thing is we're not applying it individually. Right. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here's that he should be accepted according to those symptoms. But here he's saying if you have all the unqualified shooters become so-called Brahmins, then it's a problem. Like that. So the point is that the Shudra can become an actual Brahmin, then he's accepted as a Brahmin. You don't go, oh, he was born a Shudra. That's nonsense. But if he's born a Shudra, he acts like a Shudra, then he's a Shudra. If he's born as a Brahmin, acts like a Shudra, he's a Shudra. Right, that's the... Thus, there will be discrepancies. Human society will turn into a society of animals, and the situation all over the world will be hellish. So if we do, I say, reverse engineering, start from the hellish part and work backwards, then we know what the problem is. Right? I mean, Shudra mentality is taking the position of intellectuals. And so because of this, then the whole society goes down. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King Parikit, Vishwamitra had 101 sons, of whom the middle one was known as Maruchanda. In relation to him, all the other sons were celebrated as Maruchandas. Footnote 14. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes to verse 29. He had 101 sons. Eka Shatam. Shruti says, Vishwamitra had 101 sons, 50 of which were older than Maruchanda, and 50 younger. Rig Veda, Aitreya Brahmana, 7:15-7. So that means there's always a Vishwamitra. He's in the Veda. So, they were called by the same name since he was the principal in the group. Because right, generally you go by like Duryodhanadis. Right, so he's the principal one, but in this case, then Maruchanda was the main, even though he was the middle son. So 50 above, 50 below. Generally, it would be the eldest one, but whoever's the prominent one, so it's the same principle. As general, it would be someone's born in a Brahmin family, they'd be a Brahmin. But if they're not, then they're classified that way. So in general, the eldest son would be the one that you would classify all the others by. But if he's not and someone else is, then you'll do it that way. So the Veda is very practical. You have a general standard, but then you have a specific application. Right? Because you're trying to attain the same thing as that people act according to nature. So, yeah?
Vishwamitra is a position then. The soul can be different.
Yeah. But means this Vishwamitra will be the same one. It's not that it keeps changing or something. Mm-hmm. It's not that, you know, how you say, the dance starts off and they're in the field and all that, and then go behind the tree, and then when they come out the tree, the clothes are different, and then again they spin around, and then they're in Kashmir in the snow, and then after that, then they're there, and then the kid's there and all that, and then they go behind the wall again, and now, you know, the kid's going off to school. We're not talking about that one. Okay? Yes? Yeah, so it's, in other words, for us, it's the same Vishwamitra. But it appears that every universe has a Vishwamitra, right? Just like it, the philosophies, everyone has to have a Gotama, everyone has to have a Vaisheshika, everyone has to have a, you know, like Jaimini, like this. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why we mean chewing the chewed. We only worry about this universe, but we think it's so special, but when you figure out it's just exactly the same as all the others. And in fact, ours is the smallest. You know, then, you know, it loses a little taste. Okay. They were all called by the same name since he was the principal in the group. When placing bricks for a sacrifice, one brick is purified by the famous Prana Brita mantra and is called Prana Brit. All other bricks are called Prana Brit since they are related to the principal brick. Right. So you don't have to purify all the bricks. You just have to do the puja and purify one brick. You know, in a stack of bricks. And then all the bricks are considered prana brit. Right.
Prasad. Prasad.
Hmm?
Like prasad. You offer.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, like that.
Devotees took it previously on it. They took these principles and would offer the whole supermarket.
Yes, yes. Om Vishnu, Om Vishnu, Om Vishnu. And then you go get anything you want, take it out to the truck and eat. Yeah, you're good. So everyone gets benefits. Like that. You know, same happens. And all the karmis get pushed out. Yeah, so.
Into cornfields as well.
Yeah. Oh, wow. But then the only problem with that, what if that corn gets put into something, then it comes back to the temple? Yeah, then you got a problem. But if you're confident that it won't, then go for it, yeah.
Back to the topic about the qualities of people, what is the importance of Garbhadhana Samskar if sometimes you see that even in the family of Shudras, again, people are in the quality of Brahmana and here, and the family of Brahmanas, people with quality of Shudras.
But why take the lowest thing? So if it happens, then we don't have to do it. What about all the nice Brahmin families where they have nice qualified Brahmin children? So why would we take an exception, let's say a rare exception in a Shudra family, make that the standard to therefore we don't have to do Garbhadhan?
No, I mean, I understand that Garbhadhan promotes the chance of increasing the chance of...
Yes, yes. So that's the whole point. Also, as if there's Garbhadhan, is there thought about procreation, right? You have to plan. So anything planned, then one, it didn't just happen, so it can't be ignorance. And so, and as soon as also as you plan things, the mode of passion starts to drop. So it increases the mode of goodness. So the quality, therefore, of the consciousness will be better. That will then, you know, reflect in the children.
Yeah, but the very fact that, you know, in the family of Shudras, Brahmana can appear means that their Swabhava, the previous nature, kind of, you know, overcomes the, you know, the family they want him.
No. No. It means, even if that's true, what's the use of that for you? Because the point is they have a Brahminical nature, but then they're born in a Shudra family. Now, is it proper that someone with a Brahminical nature is born in the Shudra family? Is that a good thing? You don't know. So that means someone who has a nature to follow, practice Brahminical activities, but they're in a family who absolutely is not interested in that, would that be an ideal situation? Okay. Yes. So, therefore, that means as a Brahmin in the last life, they did something wrong in which they ended. So, in other words, if you do, let's say, mental impurity, not necessarily physical impurity or intellect, but mental impurity, in other words, impure thoughts, then one can be born in a low-grade family because low-grade families, that's basically all they have is impure thoughts. But they also perform, because the idea is impure thoughts then mean impure activities. But so if you have impure thoughts, then you can be born into that situation where then there's the opportunity for having that impure thoughts and then having impure activities. But if that samskara is strong enough, then they won't. They'll just go on, and that's why you'll see sometimes those who are very elevated by nature being born in families that aren't so much. Does that make sense? That's how it goes. Just like Vidura, right? He's Dharma Raj, but then because he's cursed, then he's born into that position. I'm not sure if Brahma got a curse that he comes as Haridas. Is there something? Or he just, that's the way he appeared. I'm not sure. But...
giving Lord Krishna's first name, Brahma
Vimon. Oh, because of that. Okay, so then like that. So then he's born in the Mohammedan family, who's against the Vedic principles. Right, but he himself, being who he is, then he just starts chanting his rounds, drinking milk, and at five, then, you know, takes sannyas and leaves. You understand? So don't put. What we have to do is don't try to elevate the shudra perspective and try to make that the common platform. Because by that approach that you'll use, then it'll be, oh, so it doesn't matter, so yeah, we can do whatever we want. But then the point is then the quality of the children won't be that great. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. Because then if there's no samskar, that means just whenever they feel like it, then that's when they have kids. You know? You know, as one person was making a comment, you know, it's something. It was, I guess, the kids had grown up. They were all big, and the husband and wife were laying in bed, and they were thinking, "How come we're not up?" Right? And they were basically pointing. Then one of them says, "Because kids are big, we don't have to worry about, you know, it's not they have to get them dressed or bathed or this or that. They're bigger. They can do so like this." And then you know, one of them says that, you know, yeah, this is really nice. Basically, the idea is that being in that situation where they didn't have to get out of bed in the morning and just stay in bed together, that was really nice, you know, because the kids were there, we haven't been able to do that, right? And so then the wife points out, no, that's how we got our kids. You understand? So then what quality kids will you get? Because it wasn't planned, you're just there in bed and nothing else to do, so hey. You understand? That's why there's samskara. That's what makes the difference. So shudra means they don't worry about samskar. Means if they may do samskar, it's not that the shudras can't do it, just generally they never worry about it. But the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, that makes them unique, is they always worry about it. And if they don't, then they'll get the effect. So. Vishwamitra accepted the son of Ajigartha, known as Shunakshepa, who was born in the Bhrigu dynasty and was also known as Devarata, as one of his own sons. Vishwamitra orders his other sons to accept Shunakshepa as their eldest brother. Shunakshepa's father sold Shunakshepa to be sacrificed as a man-animal in the yajna of King Harishchandra. When Shunakshepa was brought into the sacrificial arena, he prayed to the demigods for release and was released by their mercy. Footnote 15. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes to verse 31, "Who is Shunakshepa?" That is described in this verse. At the sacrifice performed by Harishchandra, Rohita, who is supposed to be the son to be sacrificed, bought the middle son of Ajigartha named Shunakshepa as the sacrificial animal, since the father Ajigartha had more affection for his eldest than youngest sons. Shunakshepa praised the devatas and became freed from the bondage of being an animal. Although Kshunakshepa was born in the Bhargava dynasty, he was greatly advanced in spiritual life, and therefore the demigods involved in the sacrifice protected him. Because Vishwamitra, he was the priest, I think, at this. So he was impressed. Here you have someone who is so qualified, he prays the demigods, and the demigods themselves then fulfill that desire and that, so that he's, you know, extremely qualified. So he accepted him as his own son. Right. Consequently, he was also celebrated as the descendant of Gaudi, named Devarata. When requested by their father to accept Shunakshepa as the eldest son, the elder 50 of the Madhu Chandas, the sons of Vishwamitra, did not agree. Therefore, Vishwamitra, being angry, cursed them. "May all of you become malechas," he said, being opposed to the principles of Vedic culture. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 33. In Vedic literature, there are names like Malecha and Yavana. The Malechas are understood to be those who do not follow the Vedic principles. In former days, the Malechas were fewer, and Vishwamitra cursed his son to become Malechas. But in the present age, Kali Yuga, there is no need of cursing, for people are automatically Malechas. This is only the beginning of Kali Yuga, but at the end of Kali Yuga, the entire population will consist of Malechas, because no one will follow the Vedic principles. At that time, the incarnation Kalki will appear. Mlecha, Nivaha, Nidhane, Kalayasi, Kara, Baalam. He will kill all the Mlechas indiscriminately with his sword. Right? Because you don't have to worry about, you know, this one or that one. They're all... Yeah. Yeah. So in other words, those who don't follow the system, that's Mlechas. Right? So, yeah.
Who are Yavanas?
Yavanas means Malechas are who doesn't follow the Vedic principles. Yavanas are ones who are opposed to the Vedic principles. Mm-hmm. That's the slight. So you can be a Malecha and not be a Yavana.
Yavanas are worse.
Yeah, Yavanas are worse. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Malechas generally means, you know, just in general, meat eaters. Like that, but they may be nice meat eaters, just they don't know, they're untrained. So they come in contact with the Vedic principles, then they understand, then they take them up and like this. Mm-hmm. Yavana means they're opposed to. So you could be a vegetarian and be a Yavana. Mm-hmm. But generally Yavanas are also meat eaters. Otherwise how do you be, you know, they're like, what do you call it? Super malechas or something. Mm-hmm. You know? Mega malechas. You understand? So that's why the Mughals, when they came into India, they were referred to as Yavanas, because they were opposed to the Vedic. Not just because they were meat eaters. They were opposed to the Vedic.
Why Greeks are called Yavanas also?
Who?
Greeks. No?
How much do they support the Vedic culture?
No idea, but specifically there's so many others.
Yeah, so that's just the group that they're there. So the Malechas, the Yavanas, like that, they're...
And even the Buddhists, we can say Yavanas, because...
Yes, but they're generally, you know, but they're following Lord Buddha, so therefore we won't categorize them like that. They're just Buddhists. You know, that's already bad enough.
What about the Yakshas? Is
that also like... Yakshas? No, that's just a group. They do Yakshas. They're not on our level. See, these Malechas, yeah, they're on our level. So there means they're humans on our level. Means you have 400,000. So they're within the groups that don't are uncivilized. They don't follow the Vedic culture. The Yakshas, they follow the Vedic culture, but they have their own rules because they're Yakshas. They're a higher. They're in the Antariksha. They're not on Bhu. They're Bhuvar's people. So Bhuvar people have their own. Anybody outside of where we are. We have this rules that are given here. Everybody else in the universe kind of has different rules. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is it that the more you move away from the Vedic culture, it's harder to establish your nature? Because it seems like...
Yeah, it's because it's more mixed. It's more. It gets more strange.
Right. So it seems Malechas, you know, like myself, coming from Malecha culture, is... And other devotees of it, you know, express that it's hard to understand your nature
You just, so just go by what's theirs now. The point is you're a brahmachari, so you don't have to worry about what varna it is. Mm-hmm. Brahmachari means they're menial servants, they're students. You know, they're celibate. They like this. So, in other words, what kind of service do you like engaging in? Which ones for you are, you know, the ability is there, right? And which one, you know, and the mentality. If you get ones where the mentality and the ability, you know, that matches, then that's really good. But you just have to do that. You don't have to worry about anything else. Grihasthas would have to worry about it more because that's how they're going to maintain themselves. You maintain yourself by being a brahmachari.
Yeah. That means that in the brahmachari ashram there's also training according to your varna, in preparation for the grihastha ashram if necessary.
That's there, but that's not the main thing that will make grihastha ashram successful. Is being trained in the ashram aspects of grihastha that will make grihastha life successful. You can make money, but if you can't hold the family together, what's the point? Mm. And if you can hold the family together, you'll figure out how to make money.
Mm-hmm. So that means understanding the psychology of what you're talking about.
Yeah. You don't understand that, then, you know, good luck on being rich and famous. You know? You may be there in the sun, you know, in there in the sun, but you won't be able to do anything with your life.
Mm. So understanding the dynamic of ashram is actually more important than varna.
Yes. Like that.
Maharaj, I heard that the definition of mrityas from devotees that those who cannot pronounce Sanskrit, is it also true?
Could be. What is it? Mangalapuram. Mangalore. Kalikata. Calcutta. You know, it goes on and on. So, yes.
Are the mulechas what Srila Prabhupada referred to as the innocent demons?
I'm not sure.
Oh.
You'd have to look. Maybe. Yeah, because generally it's that, you know.
Yeah, your previous definition was that.
Yeah, because they're, you know, nice guys.
Yeah.
You know, like the sheep, they're nice, you know. You know, the horse, they're nice, you know. Like that.
Maharaj,
yeah.
Then the demons are said to be better than the malichas because they do follow the Vedic principles for sense gratification.
That's there, but the mentality is not very useful. Mm. But they're demons because they're in these other areas, but the main point of theirs, you're looking at, they're opposed to the Lord. They're not opposed to the Vedic principles, they're opposed to the Lord. So on the social standing, yes, they'll be in a higher position than the Malechas, but as far as, you know, actually using human life, then that's not... just as a side point, technically none of my business, but... Since you walked from that point over to this point, which I would say is about 3 meters, no? He could have walked one more meter and put it down nicely. You understand? It's not that you saved that last meter, you know, it's like that. No. You know what I'm saying? Go over there, put it nicely. Now it's all crumpled up. Even if you want to sit on it, she has to straighten it out. Well, if you put it down straight, she simply has to put it and sit on it. Right? That's so. In other words, use the brain. In other words, efficiency in relationship, not efficiency on just getting the blankets over there. Because otherwise, then to do that, you could have just stood there and then really, you know, tossed them over your head nicely. You know? Now, if you're really good, then they would just she would just move, they would land, and then she could just sit on them. Yeah, okay, like that. But we won't get into that technique here. Does that make sense?
Hmm?
Yeah, that's a mystic city. Yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Does that make sense? These are the little things that make the difference. It's not the big things. It's these things, because then there's that little bit of consideration, a little bit of that. You know, it's just like in Manu, it mentions when you're taking food out to put out for animals, it says you don't throw it on the ground. You put it down. Because we think it's animals, yeah, just toss it out there. You're just being practical. No, you have to put it down nicely. Does that make sense? So it's just that we always consider it of everybody else. Is that okay? Yeah? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanati.